Yeah, as I said, the Germans were pretty nifty with their radio detection gear, and they thought it was a bit rough on these Joes, as we call them, going in with radio apparatus and taking so long to send a message over that it could be easily detected. The whole idea of operating the radio was to get the message over as quick as possible and get off the air. Anyway, more a little bit about Massingham there. As I said, there were all kinds of things went on, parachute training. The planes used for the parachute training were operated from a place called Bleeder, just outside Massingham, an airfield. And the types of plane used at that particular time were DC-3s, or Dakotas, the old Dakota. An interesting point at one time, we had a special visitor, and it were King George VI. He came round, and he wanted to have a look at all the different weapons that we had. We had, I think, about every type of gun that the enemy used, as well as our own. And he was quite a good shot with the old King George VI. I can always remember, we were employed, we helped him. We were throwing the fishermen in the med for floats for the nets. They had like glass balls, and we were throwing these glass balls out. And King George VI was having a pot shot at them. The officer in charge of that particular place was Dobbs Parker, and we were always getting in trouble. You know, we were all young at that time, 18 years old, and we were full of spirits. And every weekend down into Algiers, and I hate to record what we did in Algiers, but we had quite a whale of a time. And I'm not going into the gory details. No, this is not the news of the world, you know. But there were certain estaminets, as they call them, frequented by the troops. And needless to say that we did participate in the more, is it the carnal side, as they say? Right, enough of that. Oh, my wife has done it. And also, having seen wine. Now, talking about wine, the only wine that I ever saw before I went out there was what my mother got at Christmas from a shop. White Ways British Sherry. That's what I thought all wine was. Never thinking it tastes horrible, right, red biddy. But we got our belly full of this, and needless to say, the ones that we picked on was always the Americans. There was a deadly feud between the British and the Americans as far as being out in out on the razzle, you know. And Algiers was quite a place. I tried to, I shouldn't have done, but I tried to tell. You know, the secrecy in those days of where you were and all of that, all your letters were censored. And I tried to get it over to my mother where I were. And I think I hinted to her that Charles Boyer wouldn't have been out of place at this particular place.
What do you mean by that?
Because he was in the film Casbah. And this is where we used to spend our time. Up in the Casbah of Algiers, having a whale of a time. Anyway, it came to a bit of rough stuff and all like that. And old Dobbs Parker, we were put on on charges. And I always remember walking into old Dobbs Parker there. He was a Coldstream guard. I always remember his hat on the table facing me. And I don't know what the hell I got off him. I got about 28 days, something like that, off him. But was it, 87, 88, when we met in Bologna at the reunion there, I let it be known to him that he gave me 28 days.
What was his reaction?
He said, "You must have bloody deserved it."
Did you deserve it?
Of course we did. Of course we did.
Had you been fighting with the Americans?
We've been fighting with the Americans. We fight with anything, you know, what I do with any of them. You know, just for... We're full of red biddy. Anyway, this is Massingham. Quite good there. Again, we had quite a lot of families and a lot of people who were put into France in the south, on the south coast of France there as agents. Anyway, I can't remember how I always asked it, but there were a Gordon, I think it was a Gordon Islander, a Major Malcolm Mumphy, and asked me if I'd like to go with him on an expedition. There was his cell, and there was a bloke called Randall, I think, Captain and Major Randall. And then there was Dick Cooper. Dick Cooper had more fruit salad on his chest. Do you know what fruit salad is?
Yes.
He had two, I know he had two MMs, and I've already been talking to you about Dick. He was an old Foreign Legion fella. He was in the party. A Maltese fellow called Charlie Borge, and Mac Donnell, and myself. And we set off, and we said we were going up to Tunis. Well, there's quite a bit of a scrap going on up there, up towards places like famous Major Kasserine and Major El Bab and all like that. Although we had a bit of a whale at the time going up. Cooper was a great boat. We had two 1500 weight lorries and a Jeep.
This must have been the spring of 43.
Yeah, it will be the spring of 43 going up there, yeah. And, but I had a great friend with the Maltese policeman there, Charlie Borge. He was a great bloke, and he seemed to have relations at odd places where we went to, you know. And I always remember going with Cooper, and Cooper took us to a place that it was like one of these more or less I expected Borgest forts, but it was one of the French posts. And he took us down in the cellar there into the dungeons, and there, lo and behold, there was his name scratched up on the wall, Dick Cooper. Apparently he was a bit of a tearaway, was Dick. But he spoke every language going. Arabic was fluent. He was fluent. He'd been quite a long while at Sidi Ben, I forgot the name. The big Foreign Legion outpost in north between north between Morocco and Algiers. Belabas, something like that. It's called. They were there, and he used to tell us all the stories. Anyway, we went on there up into what was going on. I don't know. They didn't enlighten you that lot. They kept going away, did Malcolm Mumphy. We didn't go with them. I don't know what was going on a right lot. But we finished up at a place called Sidi Bou Said. It's just outside Tunis, on the road to, I think, is it Carthage? And we messed around and we met other people, and we've been trying to trace this Mallory or something that has been dropped in. Now, I told you the squadron leader Mallory, and apparently been taken prisoner and executed somewhere up there. I didn't know he'd come in. Then from there we went down to Sousse, and Monty told us that we were going to go across to Sicily. We went across to Sicily and landed, I forgot what it was, D1, D2 or something like that, in Syracuse.
How did you get across?
On LSTs, landing craft. On landing craft.
How many of you?
Just a party. What was with Malcolm Monty, Mike Donnell, Randall, the Maltese fellow, and Dick Cooper. Right across there, we came into Syracuse, and then some of us split up. But I carried on with Malcolm Monty and Mike Donnell, and we went up towards Catania, and. I think it was here that some more of the lads came and followed up, and Bill Beggs came, he's the other Lancashire lad. Now, Monty wanted to get through the line. Well, Monty was about 6'6" tall, and if anybody looked Scandinavian, Monty did, and he wondered how he could get through the line. Now, Bill Beggs. Oh, it looked like Italian. He was swarthy, and he was blacker, wavier, you know, proper Dago looking with Bill. So he asked Bill, he said, if I dress you up in some rags, he said, I'll dress myself up as an old woman. He said, and I'll sit on a donkey. Would you lead it through the line? And Bill, like an idiot, said, yes. And they did this. And they went through the line there. What information they were getting, I don't know to this day. But they came back. And I know that Milton has put it in the... He did put it in his book, Sweetie's War, a book that he wrote. He did put it in. And then we went up towards Catania, a place called Lentini, I think it was. And we'd already sent a couple of blokes on the other side into Catania, a couple of either British Italians or Canadian Italians or something like that into Catania, and with radio sets, but not the usual B2 or A2 sets. I don't know what sets they were carrying, but. They got me to get they requisitioned an army, an American army. We call them gym palaces, but it's like a radio control lorry. And I took it up to the river just before you onto the plain of Catania. There, they were well known. They called it Dead Horse Corner. Because of the number of dead that were lying around there, they couldn't be buried. They were just lying in the ditch, and quite the majority of them there were that the German parachute doings, the Hermann Göring division, you know. And it was pretty warm as well, and you looked at them and all, you know, they looked terrible in the ditches. They're all bloated. Anyway, we hung up there for about the best part of a week trying to get in contact with this party that had gone in on the other side of this Italian, and of no avail. And later on, apparently, when we did eventually get up to Naples, one of the boats that they recruited was a Carabinieri or something like that, who had been in Sicily and had been there at the time when they'd taken this fellow prisoner, they copped him, and they made him try and spill the beans, and the way he hung on, and all that, and the punishment that he took was really fantastic, I do believe. And this fellow says, I'll never forget that. He says, and this is the reason why I want to come and do something, some work for the Allies. Anyway, there we were. We're in the fight, and the fighting more or less calmed down then. So, I always think about Monty. Monty was a cool customer, dead cool, as crafty as a load of monkeys. And this lorry that we had, it was full of bloody plastic explosives. Plastic explosives and 808. 808 is the noble explosive, the one that smells like almonds. The plastic explosive, there was no smell with it. But we had about, I would say about 10 Bergen rucksacks in back. Big Norwegian rucksacks, you know, with this stuff in, and all the answers that go with it, the cordex and the fuses, the time pencils, all the blinking issues. And every time there was anything happening, any fighting and all that, Monday used to say, come on, everybody underneath the lorry, everybody underneath the lorry. And we used to get underneath the damn lorry, and the thing was flooded with explosives, you know. I thought about it after, but you know, I'm bloody idiot I were. Anyway, there we are. And Monty was there. He says, I'll agree. He says, I'll fail. He says, the first time we're able to get, you know, these Italian monkeys up to the organ grinders, he said, we want to get one of those monkeys. Because, he said, we put the monkey inside the lorry. He says, anybody comes to try and pinch stuff out of the lorry, it just wake us up. I was thinking, Malcolm Monty. Anyway, I've something really good to tell you later on when we're in doings. He had one or two big American generals or brigadiers and all that, always coming round having talks. We didn't carry a cook or anything like that. There was myself, Monty, and Mike Vanell at that particular time. And I used to say, we used to fend for ourselves more or less, you know, cook our own grub. And we were living in an old farmer, we requisitioned this farmer. And he says, I've noticed that yours seem to make good food for yourself. He says, now look, he says, I've got some G1 or something they call them, G1. Supposed to be our intelligence, the American intelligence, these brigadiers or generals come in. He said, do you think you could rustle us something up? I said, yes, I could do it, Major. I said, but I'll tell you this, I'm not washing up. Oh, she said, that's all right. She said, I'll wash up after. I always think about that, you know. Anyway, it was at this particular place, you know. Yeah, your good times, you know. You can just remember the good times. And we sat outside one night, and Monty happened to relate to us. He says, you know, he told Mac and myself, he says, Hargreaves, he says, there's an explosive now available that can wipe a whole town out. And he says, it's not, and he kind of went into bits of detail of it, you know. Well, it went in at one ear and out of the other with me, and I know damn well that was the thing that he'd been involved, because he'd been on the Norwegian episode itself at Monty, and it was all the heavy water effort that they'd been on, although there was nothing like uranium or anything like that. It was just the moderator stuff, the heavy water, which I didn't know about at that time. But he was telling us about it. And when it did come about, actually I was home when they dropped the bombs on Japan. I said, my God, he's bloody right. He's old Monty. And he told us it would bring it, he says it could end the war from this. Anyway, when we were there, we had our first two kind of resident Joes that came with us. One called, two Italians, one called Dinaro, and the other, I forgot his name, but I can picture him now. But all that is a more saner one. I just forgot his name. His name's just gone for the time being. But they kind of stayed with us quite a long while. And from there, from the eastern coast of Sicily, we went across a beautiful tour of Sicily. I'll never forget it. Right across the centre of Sicily, up to a place, and we stayed a couple of days there, a place called Enna. It was a town on right on the top of a cliff, say, as startling as what I would say if I went to Jordan to see Petra, something like that, you know. A really fantastic place. And then across to Palermo.
But you personally didn't get behind enemy lines?
I didn't, no. Up to the front and all like that, but we got all the stuff ready for them and that. We then went up to Palermo and messed around in Palermo for a short while. And I think, was it the armor? I can't remember whether it was where we were in Palermo or whether we were on the sea that the armistice came about. But the armistice again, I don't know whether you know about this, but the armistice again was brought about, well, not brought about, but assisted by one of our blokes, Mallaby. Did you ever hear about Dick Mallaby?
A bit.
Yeah. Dick, again, he was a bloke who could speak Italian because he lived most of his life in Italy, and he was parachuted, but into northern Italy very, very early on, before the armistice, into Lake Como or something, Lake Garda, Lake Como, I think it was. And as soon as he hit the water, he was picked up right away and put in jail. And when the armistice came about, Badoglio wanted some contact with the Allied side, and somebody remembered that Mallaby was imprisoned and all like that, and a radio was put to him, and all the traffic went through him. Anyway, we went up to Palermo, and then from Palermo we got one or two more Italian recruits. Which I thought were recruits, but apparently what they did, they turned out to be eventually part of the government. I can't say for sure, but I think one of them was Di Gasperi. There were one or two of these fellows that came with us who fought, because they were always talking about my messages, if I can remember an encode. I was supposed to have forgot all this, but they talked about Sforza, what Sforza said and what this said, and these people that were in America that had been banned from being in Italy, I intellectuals and all like that. But there were one or two people who eventually formed the Italian government, assembled with us in Palermo, and we came across. We had one or two Italian cars, such as Lancias and all like that. Anyway, we went on the invasion across to Salerno, to the Bay of Salerno. Not only did we take our fearful 1,500 weight lorries and jeeps, but we had a two or three of these Italian cars like Lancias. And I always remember this LST that went on wasn't an American one. And I always remember one of these American sailors coming over, and he kind of looked at one of these Lancias, and with a southern, I would say Tennessee bloody drawl, said, "Hey, bud, is this what they call one of those amphibious jeeps?" I always remember that. Anyway, we came off the boat. I think we got them bogged down because it was about 3 foot deep in mud. Heavy armour had gone over and it had been raining and all like that. I don't know whether we managed to get them through or not, but it was easy to acquire new cars. And we went up into Salerno, and I think the street that we stayed in was Pius or something. It was named after one of the popes and all that. Monza made his headquarters. Well, just over the other side of the hill, the Germans had a lovely battery of 88 millimeters anti-aircraft and ranging guns. And they used to knock the living daylights out of us, at least, you know. But it never affected Monza. Monza never batted an eyelid. He'd be there with the bloody door blown off the building and all like that. He didn't have any nerves at all on Monday. Anyway, he says, come on, he says, let's have a look out. And believe you me, we got up to the outskirts of Rome. To Rome. And had to come back.
From Salerno?
From Salerno. We got up to the outskirts of Rome. The Germans hadn't assembled their army to take the, you know, to take the offensive. Anyway, we came back and...
What happened to you on that journey?
Nothing. Round to bloody death, but nothing happened to us. We got to the outskirts of Rome.
Was this Rome or Naples?
Rome, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was Rome. And later, we did go up to Naples. And... We put a radio station up in the Vomero, which is the highest part. It was the street. It was the Via Belvedere. Via Belvedere in Rome. I made one or two inquiries about it, and somebody says that this house has been pulled down, and it's now a multi-story skyscraper. But the woman didn't rank much of her. She was a bit of a fascist woman, was that woman in that house there. And it was here that we started increasing our contingent. We got Max Salvador there. Gubbins boy, who... Later on with Monty, I think they're up in Gaeta, they were under bombardment, I think, young Gubbins, General Colin Gubbins, his son Colin, was killed, and Monty, he got badly wounded in the head, Monty, and that was the last we saw of him in the SOE. But we had a lot of other ones. There was quite a character, Gallegos. And at that time, one of the things that we did